5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You're a 50-year-old woman. Up till this point, you've done everything correctly. You've lived a good life. You have raised a family. You have played athletics, notably. You are a good person. You're a good family person. You're a good friend. You're a philanthropist. You're a humanitarian. You do volunteer work for a cancer organization. You provide patients with free rides back and forth to their appointments, patients who otherwise would not get their treatments. You also do all the things right. You take care of yourself. You're very healthy. You work out and you go to your doctors. Time for your mammogram. There's a small abnormality in your right breast. It's less than a centimeter. As a matter of fact, it's only 6 millimeters. Your doctors tell you not to worry. You get a biopsy. They tell you it's early stage breast cancer. Not to worry. You need surgery. You go, you have surgery, and guess what? It's not as simple as they thought. Not only do you have a small breast cancer, but you have 3 positive lymph nodes. Everything changes. Your world crashes. Now you need chemotherapy. You need double mastectomies, reconstruction, and radiation. 8 months later, on your last day of radiation, you're surrounded by your 2 beautiful twin sons heading off on basketball scholarships to college next year. You've been the perfect mother, perfect wife, perfect family member. You've been through hell. Your body has been through hell. You feel like hell. You're surrounded by 25 of the people who have been taking care of you every day for the last 34 days. As I said, you're surrounded by your sons. One of the therapists leads you to a bell, and they read you this poem. Your treatment is done and we are glad. Go out in the world and find the fun to be had. We wish you smiles and happy tears. Spend time with those you hold so dear. Come back with good news to show and tell. Now ring the heck out of that bell. You ring the bell tearfully. You embrace your sons. You embrace your team. And you head out into the world, uplifted into your survivorship. This is Dr. Tom Iannelli welcoming you all to another episode of the Croc Podcast. Today's episode is entitled For Whom the Bell Tolls. Angel Santana on my left, co-host extraordinaire, podcaster himself, Have Faith, Let It Begin. Angel, are you excited to meet Becky?
I am always excited to meet somebody new. And just like the audience in the Croc Nation, I don't even know what's going to happen. And I'm your producer. So happy Sunday.
Yes, happy Sunday. And welcome, as I said, my dear Croc Nation. Today is going to be a really interesting podcast. I really believe in you guys out there. I never water things down for you. Many of you, most of you, probably don't have any medical expertise. But that does not hold me back from sharing very important medical information, some of the most cutting edge things that are going on. And today's episode, we're going to be talking about the cancer bell, how they perceive the cancer bell. Angel, just your gut instinct, would you think that finishing treatments with cancer and then having your group with you and your family and ringing that bell after being told that beautiful poem, would you think that would be a positive experience or a negative experience?
I would hope that it'd be a positive experience because you're at the very end. This is the end of the treatment. You don't want to come back.
Exactly. I think so as well. However, you know that what we're here for is not what I think, nor what Angel thinks. It's what the literature shows. And we've been surprised before. So we always try to give equal time to everybody, and we really try to do deep dives into literature. And as I said, I'm going to teach you guys a couple of things today. And believe me when I tell you, I believe in you. I believe you're going to understand this, even though we're going to get into some pretty interesting and complex psychological theory. I still believe in you, and I know everyone is going to be able to digest this and hopefully take it home and be able to utilize it in your own survivorship. So we all know what we've been preaching on the Croc podcast since its inception. And the reason why the Croc podcast is even here is because of the complexity of you, of the survivor. You have a disease which is complex. You have a disease which is unique. You have a disease which plays mind games on you. You have a disease which is threatening and scary. And oftentimes, terrifying would be the word I would use. And for that reason, plus the fact that you're getting very toxic treatments that require special assistance and special care, and everything that we do in the oncology world, in the cancer world, has to be thought of very critically and very comprehensively for you, for the survivor, for your complexities. You deserve that. You really do deserve that. So even something as seemingly positive as ringing a cancer bell might have some downsides, and we're going to talk about that today. So we're going to begin, Angel and Croc Nation, is the cancer bell, the end of treatment bell, is it good or bad? We talked a little bit about Rebecca. She's going to be a guest on our podcast shortly. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit and take a deep dive into the literature. There's a lot of thinking that goes behind all things survivor, as I said, and there are no easy answers. And here on the Croc podcast, as I said, we're going to present both sides of the story. The first thing we're going to talk about is a word that I believe you would have never heard of, because I never did. It's called heuristics. Heuristics from the Greek means I find, I discover. And basically what heuristics is a psychological science or the study of our brain strategies in the employment of complex formulations for our decision-making, for our problem-solving, how we come to judgments, and how do we make memory of events. For example, in my job, we draw volumes, tumor volumes, on a patient's diagnostic imaging. And if we were to take every cut of each thinly sliced CAT scan or MRI or PET scan, we would probably be drawing contours probably all day. So what we do is we interpolate that information. We'll take a few contours, we'll scroll down a few centimeters, take some more contours, and the computer is programmed to take all of that disparate information and sum it up or interpolate it to make a volume. And that's what our brains do when we make decisions, when we make judgments, because it's too complex, even for our complex mind, to take all the data and sift through every molecule of data to make a decision. Our brains can't do that. We're not wired to do that. We're wired in order to find the high points and the low points, and our brains interpolate between those points. And that's what heuristics is, the study of this decision-making and the way the brain works. Now, there's many, many different heuristics. So if you go to Wikipedia, and you look up heuristics, and I'll even spell it for you in case you're interested. H is in Harry, E, U is in uni, R is in Richard, I-S-T-I-C-S, heuristics. Again, if you're interested. In that grouping of all different types of studies of heuristics, the one that pertains to us today is called the peak end rule, and how our impressions become memory. And please stay with me, because I actually have, you know, a connection between what I'm talking about and the cancer bell. So please stay with me. So the peak end rule is described as such definitively, or I would say just formally. It's a person's subjective perception during the most intense and final moments of an event, which are averaged together into a single judgment. For example, a person might judge the difficulty of a workout by taking into consideration only the most demanding part of the workout. And what happens at the very end, at the cool down, A difficult workout, as described, could be perceived as easier or more relaxed because of those last couple of minutes of your cool down. And that's what the peak end rule is. And that's what we believe is what's going on in the positive interpretation of that bell, that end of treatment bell. Here's another way of saying it. Think about the last time you went on vacation. With coronavirus, it probably was quite a long time ago. But what do you remember? Perhaps you remembered a particularly beautiful view from the top of a mountain, from a long hike. Maybe you thought about an interesting exhibit you saw at a museum, or a perfect morning on the beach with your family. Angel with little Ariel walking around the beach. I know that tears came to you by remembering the merry-go-round. So she might have had 50 temper tantrums, but that merry-go-round moment will make that a positive experience. That memory will be judged as positive. Whether the memories were happy or miserable, your overall impressions of your last vacation are likely featured on just a few particular small, strong moments. We remember experiences in our lives as a series of snapshots rather than a complete catalog of events. Our minds quickly average the moments that most stand out in these memories to form our opinion of the past. The most emotionally intense points of an experience and at the end of that experience are heavily weighted on how we remember that event. So I'll give you one last example before we jump in and dive into the two papers. This thought, this heuristic, this section or this subcategory of heuristics were founded by Daniel Kahneman and Barbara Fredrickson based on their 1993 study that took volunteers. And they did an uncomfortable but not dangerous experiment by putting each of the study participants, their hands in a tub of cold water. So the water was just say 57 degrees and you held your hand in that bath for 60 seconds at 57 degrees. Then they had you put your hand in the same bucket, in a different bucket, where it was also at 57 degrees, but then after 1 minute, they kept your hand in the bath for an additional 30 seconds. And at that 30 seconds, your hand was still in cold water, but the water was only 59 degrees. So it was 2 degrees hotter than what you were used to. Now, in your mind, what would you think people would think is less heinous? Would they think it would be the 60 seconds of uncomfortableness? Again, we make up words here. Or is it the minute and a half of the cold water and then the cold yet not as cold water?
You're going to go with the smaller amount of time. So
that's
60 seconds.
Exactly. Course. But you want to know the answer? The answer is the second.
Really?
Correct. And that's exactly what peak end rule is. And that's how it relates exactly to cancer survivorship and how patients, we think, would have a good experience with the cancer bell because despite all their suffering. So Becky, as I said, went through hell in a handbasket. You know, everyone's telling her it's going to be okay. She ends up with surgery. It's a small tumor. She has nodal disease, needs chemotherapy, mastectomies, reconstruction, radiation. She's been through, like I said, a quantum amount of things. And that last day, she rings that bell and it becomes a positive event. She leaves the end of her cancer treatments with positivity. And that is the thought process. That is the thought. Now, the two papers we're going to be discussing, one comes from South America, one comes from Chile, called Ringing the Bell at the End of Treatment, Assessment of a Patient's Experiences in a Latin American Center. The authors are Dr. Issa, Dr. Soleil, and Dr. Bacall. And the purpose and objective of the paper is ringing the bell at the end of radiation treatment is a practice that has become common in many cancer centers in the United States, but had not previously been introduced in Chile. It appears that patients and their families enjoy this experience, but we had not made a formal assessment after its introduction. A patient donated a bell to our center in 2019, and after being treated in the United States, where he found the experience to be positive, we introduced it into our center, where approximately 350 patients receive treatment every month. We attempted to evaluate the patient's experience with it, measuring satisfaction with ringing the bell at the end of treatment, and analyzing if satisfaction was related to factors such as sex, age, educational level, and palliative versus curative intent. There were three questions. How does the bell make you feel? How do you value the bell? And how does your family value the bell? So for how does the bell make you feel, 1.69% of the participants had no answer. Zero felt it was a very negative experience. 2.12% felt it was a negative experience. 4.24% felt indifferent. 35.59% found it to be a positive experience. And 56.36% found it to be a very positive experience. What I would expect. Angel?
I totally agree.
Okay. How do you value the bell? No answer, 2.13%. Very negative, 0%. Negative, 0.43%. Indifferent, 3.4%. Positive, 32.77%. And very positive, 61.28%. What you would expect? Me too. How does your family value the bell? No answer, 5.08%. Negative, 0%. Very negative, 0%. Indifferent, 3.39%. Positive, 25.42%. Very positive, 66.1%.
Okay.
Conclusion from this study, which was a very nice study, by the way, survey results on ringing the bell were extremely positive. No further analysis was possible because of the absence of negative experiences on the part of the patient. The bell has a permanent place at the institution now. So that's kind of what I would think. But who taught us a lesson? Do you remember the podcast with Dr. Len Berry and Dr. Katie Deming? When we were starting our podcast and our first module was on patient survivorship, defining survivorship. And the first thing that we tried to do on this podcast was to come up with a definition of survivorship. And we went back to Dr. Fitzhugh Mullen. We went back to his experiences back in the 1980s, the changes and the complexities that went on over the decades. And then we came across the only opposing voice in the wilderness from Dr. Deming and Dr. Len Berry about some patients not thinking that they really wanted to be fitted with that term survivor. They didn't identify with it. They didn't like it. They didn't feel it fit for them. They were offended by it. And it was a beautiful paper explained very beautifully. Croc Nation, if you have not heard that podcast, please go back to our module, Defining Survivorship, and you'll find that episode with Dr. Berry and Dr. Deming. Some of the things that you wouldn't think of, that I wouldn't think of, not a cancer survivor, but what I didn't think of was, what would be some of the things that would make a person maybe not identify with the term survivor, and more to the point of today's podcast, not appreciate the ringing of the bell or the bell ringing ceremony? Well, I came up with six, and some of these were coexistent with Dr. Deming and Dr. Berry's paper. But I was thinking, if and when it's my turn to be that patient who has to ring that bell, because most likely we're all going to be, sitting on that other chair, right, rather than sitting in the chair we are now, by the grace of God, is embarrassment. You're the center of attention, and as big of a mouth as I have, and as much as I love to host parties and all those types of things, believe it or not, I hate to be the center of attention. I am a loud introvert. I am probably the loudest introvert I've ever met. For a guy who squawks as much as I do, you would never believe I'm an introvert, but I would be very uncomfortable, being in that position, to be honest with you. Also, this is a coexisting number with Dr. Deming and Dr. Berry's paper, the jinx, right? We call it in Italian, the malocchia, that people wear the Sicilian horns around their neck to try to ward off evil with evil. But the jinx is, hey, you know, I'm a survivor. I don't want to go screaming that I'm a survivor or that I'm cured, because what if I'm not? You know, that would be horrible. And the other thing is, many people don't believe that cancer is curable. And that's not true, by the way, Croc Nation, God bless you. That is truly not true. That's a hype that's out there. It's perpetuated. Now, some cancer patients can't be cured, but cancer can be cured. And you're not jinxing anybody, but by, you know, being allowing us to honor you. Not curable. Again, cancer is curable. Other people have it worse than I do. I don't want to ring the bell because I feel I'm disrespecting the people who may not be able to make it. And here I'm going to make it. And I don't really feel comfortable with that. Also, think about this, Angel. We work very hard. And I'd like to think that I actually know this to be true. I don't even have to ask it. But the staff here at our hospital at Garnet, especially in radiation oncology, but throughout the oncology community here, even medical oncologists who are offsite and the surgical oncologists and all the hundreds of staff members that work with cancer patients. I mean, we really love you guys. I mean, we don't like you guys. We're not just respectful of you. We're not just caring about you. We're not just a little empathetic. I mean, we really love you guys. We really want you to do well. And I guess in some places, you know, people are busy, they're overworked, they're overwhelmed. To sit at a cancer bell and really, you know, you're there, all of your emotions are there, you're teary-eyed. You don't want to be surrounded by a bunch of people who really are just thinking about what their next task is going to be, or they don't really want to be there. They just forced to be there because it's the right thing to do because your supervisor told you have to go to the bell ringing or whatever. You see all these little bugs just coming out of nowhere, you know, coming from different rooms, coming to converge. And, you know, maybe they're upset that they had to stop their work just to, you know, honor me. And I could tell you in this place, and I suspect in all places, because as I always said, cancer caregivers are some of the greatest, most inspired and most dedicated people that I know of in any profession. And they truly love their patients. They really do love you. So if they're there to honor you, sometimes it's as important for us to honor you guys as it is for you to be honored. And I think that's one of the reasons why the paper coming out of Chile, where the family members were extraordinarily happy because they've watched their loved ones suffer. They've watched their loved ones go through treatment and have all those side effects. And they were completely impotent. They couldn't do anything. They could rub your back. They could put medicine on you. They could help you. They could cook your meals. They could pray with you. They could do all those things. But really, they couldn't do anything more than that. And to be able to participate in this ceremony, and many of our patients ask us to tape it with their, you know, their cameras on their phone and take pictures of their families. Sometimes people come from out of state for the ceremony to surprise the patient. It's a really beautiful, beautiful thing. And lastly, you know, ringing the bell might bring out the reality that you're leaving the womb. So the quote unquote womb, your active treatments are completed. You're done. You're no longer going to be going into radiation daily. You're no longer going into the infusion center weekly. You're no longer seeing your radiation oncologist every other day. You're no longer seeing your medical oncologist every week. You're really out there now. That's the transition that we talked about in the defining survivorship modules, where you're now transitioning to the next stage. And perhaps the bell might be a sort of a mental reminder of you now losing that protective blanket that you've been covered with throughout all your treatments. So those are some of the reasons that we were thinking about. So, Angel, you can never accuse us of not always looking for the other side, looking for the other opinions. And there is another opinion that comes out of the University of California, Southern California. The major, what would you say, the primary author is Dr. Patrick Williams. I actually have seen him lecture. He's a tremendous radiation oncologist. We're very privileged and honored to have him in our in our group, in our radiation oncology community, and a bunch of other doctors, statisticians and things. Dr. Janelle also. And basically the purpose of his study, which was published in our Bible, right? Our Bible is the Red Journal, the International Journal of Radiation Oncology, Biology, and Physics. We call it the Red Journal for short, thank God, because if we had to use that terminology, we would get tongue-tied. It was from volume 105, published in, as I said, 2019, pages 247 to 253. The purpose of the paper was patients around the world often ring a bell on the final day of radiation therapy to celebrate treatment completion. Patients appear to enjoy ringing the bell, but its psychological impact is unexamined. Applying a psychological principle named the peak end rule, which we just discussed, we hypothesized that ringing the bell would improve patients' perception of the overall distress from cancer treatment. So what Dr. Janelle and Dr. Williams did was they enrolled two cohorts of patients completing definitive radiation in their center. Patients in the control arm completed therapy and filled out a survey. And then after those patients were done, they put a bell in. Now, the reason why they didn't randomize this trial, and that's going to be important. We're going to talk a little bit about randomization. We're going to talk a little bit about p-values, talk a little statistics here, was because they felt that it would bias the results because of patients that were on the bell ringing would ring the bell. Patients on the non-bell ringing cohort would hear the bell, hear the clapping, maybe want to have it done, and it would kind of bias their results. So that's why they did it sequentially. But that's one of the limitations of the study. And again, I'm going to look for the limitations because quite frankly, as much as I respect this paper, I don't believe this paper. So we're going to, you know, keep a, what would you say, Angel, a jaded eye. Mm-hmm. We're going to be very critical of this paper. And I think appropriately so, right? Basically, this, they had 210 patients that were enrolled. Again, both of the cohorts were very well balanced as they were in the Latin American study. And at the end, believe it or not, and it would actually surprise the authors, the bell group reported worse overall distress scores than those not ringing the bell. And the numbers were 5.6 versus 4.7 with a p-value of 0.045. We're going to get to that in 3 seconds. And then after their first follow-up, they repeated it. And that number went from 6.4 versus 5.1 with a p-value of 0.009. So let's take a minute now before we take a deep dive into this contrary paper to talk about what a p-value is in a scientific paper. So I'm going to give you the definition, and then I'm going to tell you what it means in real words, okay? In statistical hypothesis testing, the p-value or probability value or asymptomatic significance is the probability for a given statistical model that when the null hypothesis is true, the statistical summary could be the same as or of greater magnitude than the actual observed results. So does that mean anything to you, Angel?
We need to just get a little bit more clarification.
Yeah, let's do that, actually. Let's get a little more clarification. So let's take this example for instance. So anytime you're looking at something, and I had the greatest time being a dad to my young kids, because what I would do when they were kids is I would have contests. You all know that I love sports, but you might know that I also love food and I love having fun. And we would have contests between Kentucky Fried Chicken versus Popeyes. We would have contests between Wendy's and Burger King. We would have contests between, different sodas. And we would basically get each person, we would do blind studies where none of the kids knew what they were eating or drinking. And we would do a statistical analysis of KFC versus Popeyes, KFC won. No, I'm only kidding. Or Diet Coke versus, Diet Dr. Pepper. We do all these studies and then we would kind of put it together. So what we were trying to do was we were trying to find out which is better. And that's kind of what we're looking at here with the bell. What is better? Do people like ringing the bell or do they not like ringing the bell? Now, if you were to take 100 people who ring the bell and take 100 people who don't ring the bell, and then you were to sample them with these questionnaires, and then look at the data. That's why I think there's two medical doctors on this paper, and there's three statisticians. What the statisticians try to do is they try to evaluate what is true and what is valid and what is not in the world of probability. So, for example, when you go and take a coin and flip it a million times and it comes up heads a million times, what are the odds that it'll come up heads on the next roll? It's 50-50, because it doesn't matter, because in statistical analysis, there's always, you always have to take into account chance and coincidence. But what the statisticians do with data is they try to sift through what is probable, what is due to coincidence, and what is truly a difference. As I said, KFC being superior to Popeyes. So KFC, if you want to be one of the sponsors of the Croc podcast, I can tell you right now, I would welcome that in 1 second. And by the way, my children grew up to be very healthy and, you know, fit children. I don't want anybody to call dyphus on me. They did very, very well, by the way. But in any case, getting back to the p-value. So in Dr. Williams' paper, the p-value was 0.045 and 0.056 for those two endpoints that we discussed. That means in plain English, that if you get a p-value that's less than 0.05, that means that there's a 5% or less probability that the results of the study were due to chance. Now, different people put a different criteria for what makes something statistically significant, but generally speaking, that number p-value of 0.05 reaches the level of being statistically significant, meaning that ringing the bell caused more distress than not ringing the bell. Kentucky Fried Chicken is better than Popeyes, that it's more than, there's less than a 5% chance of it being a coincidence as it to be true. And that's kind of what the p-value is. Now, getting back to the paper, after that little, we got off the wrong exit and we just kind of turned around and but we got our GPS back and we're back on track. We're going to get back to the paper. So, counter to our hypothesis, which is the conclusion, ringing the bell on the final day of radiation therapy worsens patients' evaluation of overall distress from cancer treatment, and this distress persists and even worsens in the months after treatment. Emotional arousal created by ringing the bell may magnify the distress from cancer treatment and subsequently worsen the perception of the distress from treatment. So really important stuff. So let's talk a little bit about emotionality. The final day of treatment, end of treatment is EOT, is an emotional day for patients. Oncologists typically use positive language, such as graduation, to describe treatment completion, but survivors describe feelings of fear and abandonment because it often signals the transition from active care to the more passive phase of cancer survivorship. We talked about that.
Right.
Bell ringing ceremonies in radiation oncology clinics and medical oncology infusion centers in which patients ring a bell at end of treatment are widespread. Clinical staff, as well as other patients in proximity, applaud and congratulate the patient on finishing treatment. The practice is gaining recognition in the literature and the press, and a quick internet search uncovers patient blogs, videos, and news articles from around the world that discuss the joy and victory that patients derive from ringing the bell, thought to be a symbol of closure and hope, although some controversy around bell ringing has begun to surface. Ringing a bell in this scenario has all the features needed to become a permanent memory for patients. It involves their participation. It is of great personal importance and it is unique. But now, Angel, I have to tell you, I am biased. I don't want to believe this paper, although it was well done and it should be respected. But I would like to talk to you a little bit more on this paper and try to find some of the limitations and some of the things that we could criticize about in this paper. So the first thing is the patient questionnaire did not stratify patients. That means it didn't really ask patients who were the patients who had the worst side effects and try to put them together in order to judge apples versus apples versus apples versus oranges. So a patient might have a really negative experience with bell ringing if they had a terrible time with their treatment. So if I have a stage one breast cancer who flies through treatments with zero problems, and then they're also in you know, and then there's 100 of them in that group, they're going to have a great bell ringing experience. But instead, what if you had 100 patients that were head and neck patients who had a terrible time with treatment? They're going to all have a negative experience. So it's possible that this paper did not properly evaluate that indicator and perhaps may have biased the results. Number two, they may have limited their findings by the questions. I thought that the people from Chile, the professors from Chile, I thought the questions were great. How does the bell make you feel? How do you value the bell? And how does your family value the bell? In this paper, their questions were more like, they asked if ringing the bell improved negative memories. So in my opinion, not a great question, because I think it's a bias, to be honest with you. We talked about the lack of randomization. Again, it's a statistical reality that you should really be stratifying patients in a randomized manner, meaning taking patient A, patient B, patient A, patient B, patient A, patient B, not patient A, patient A, patient A, patient A, patient A, and then patient B, patient B, patient B, patient B. I understand their theory. I understand why they did it. But at the same time, it does devalue the study. Number four, there was a longer interval between treatment completion and follow-up in the patients that had negative experiences. So again, another bias. And again, there was no evaluation of the family response. When we talk to Becky today, I'm going to ask her is how it made her feel to have her two sons there. I call them the Twin Towers. They're about 17 feet tall. And they're beautiful kids, and they were so proud to watch these kids, like, you know, have tears in their eyes to see their mom ring this bell was truly fantastic. And I really think that that was a limitation in this study. So, Angel, I think I did a decent job, if I don't say so myself, talking about the cancer bell. I spoke a lot, but I wanted to, and I'll tell you why. I had this cancer bell episode in my mind for over 6 months. I've been wanting to do this. We've been so busy with doing our modules and some of the great stuff we did with Len Barry and Katie Deming and our new best friend, Rena Audish, who's, in my opinion, just the patron saint of all of this. She's amazing. So without further ado, Angel, what I think we should do is take a little break. And Angel, would you be able to have Rod put these papers on our website?
Absolutely. Maybe? We'll make sure the links go up.
Yeah. So for you Crockers who want to be out there and to actually take a look at the two papers that we discussed, it'll be there for you. Sure. I taught you a little bit about heuristics, right? I talked a little bit about the peak end rule. I'm going to quiz you, Angel, at the end of this podcast to make sure. I'm going to ask you about statistical significances, about randomizations, about null hypotheses, and about the p-value. Are you ready?
I'm ready, but quick question. Yeah. Can you just repeat those papers one last time? Because maybe by this point, people that are watching may be wanting to search, and instead of them having to go back, we can just repeat it real quick. And then
absolutely. No, there's no problem at all, at all, at all. So the first paper, the paper which was negative was called The Cancer Bell, Too Much of a Good Thing. Patrick Williams is the primary author. The International Journal of Radiation Oncology, Biology, and Physics, 2019, volume 105. And the one from Chile was presented as an abstract and poster session at our ASTRO meeting back in 2020. And the main author was Dr. Isa, I-S-A. And the name of the paper was Ringing the Bell at the End of Treatment, Assessment of Patients' Experiences in a Latin American Center.
All right. So without further ado, we'll take a commercial break. If you haven't had a chance to take a look at our Twitter account, we encourage you to do that. It is at CrocVIP. For all of you out there, you don't have to wait much longer because we'll be back in a quick 5 seconds.
Five, four, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back, Crockers, to For Whom the Bell Tolls. Angel Santana on my left. Have faith, let it begin.
You can't get any more energetic than it is right now.
Man, there is energy. It's like being in Cameron Indoor Stadium, Duke, Carolina, and it's the fourth quarter, 20 seconds left. Duke is down by one.
I wish I had the foam finger right now so I can just wave it in front of the camera.
Kyle Filipowski has the ball. 20 seconds left. He dribbles the ball down on number 41. Carolina Blue stuffs it in his face with 2 seconds. Duke wins the game. What do you think?
I love it.
Angel, we are proud as punch to welcome back. We had promised the Croc Nation, Becky Filipowski. We have her on. And before we start with you, Becky, I just want to bring up something that we had discussed off air. And actually, this whole bell ringing ceremony, the whole process actually starts in our medical center with Angel. And I failed to mention that during the first part of our taping. Angel, why don't you tell the Croc Nation about what your contribution is and how one day we hope to get you over to see one of these ceremonies.
I have the honor and privilege of being in the same facility as you. I do the switchboard 911. What I am in charge of is all the emergencies. Well, in this particular situation, because it's a very positive, which we're going to discuss.
Yes.
Your staff would call me at the switchboard to indicate that we have a bell ringer. I would then, of course, with enjoyment, I get excited and I click click of the mouse and it sends it back to you. And I believe, I don't know what happens on your end, but my job is to click that button.
Every single phone in the department rings.
Okay.
Every single one.
And it can't happen without me.
It's almost like you're in a firehouse.
Right.
And it's a fire alarm and everyone gets the phone call bell ringer. And then everybody, as I said in the podcast, everyone comes out like a bunch of ants.
Yep.
From everywhere, from physics, from the clinic, from the nursing station, from the inpatient area, from the front desk, from the bathroom, wherever. And we all converge, you know, at the bell. So it's really what you do. You are the Pied Piper Angel.
I'm excited now. Now I want to see it though. I got to be invited again.
I invite you.
The last time I came, it was a delay and I couldn't stay, but I'm excited.
Yeah. So Becky, you know, one of the advantages of being able to tape ahead a little bit is that we've already told everybody, all 300 million cancer survivors in the world, about how awesome you are and everything about you. And also, you don't know what we said. So we could have said anything, that you wear polka dotted underwear. We could have said anything we wanted, but we didn't. We were quite kind. And I would know that, right? I'm her doctor. I would know these things. But all kidding aside, what I'm going to specifically not share with you is we critically analyzed two papers that evaluated the positivity and potential negativity of the bell ringing ceremony. And we're going to get your kind of input as someone who had one of the most moving bell ringing ceremonies. And we're going to get into that in more detail. But let's start first and foremost with Becky Filipowski. Let's talk about you. Tell us about you as a person. That's the first thing I always ask our patients. Tell us about your essence.
Well, as a person, I was an elite athlete. I was a highly trained basketball player. Made many marks of my own in high school, and went on to play Division I basketball, just like you mentioned with one of my twins. The other one is still trying to decide. I was always active. I was always an athlete. You know, that was just, you know, a part of my life. I went on to school and studied in education. I became an athletic trainer, then went and got my master's in health education. And so I worked a lot in the area as an athletic trainer. I taught a lot in phys ed. I coached sports, and most recently towards the latter part of my education, my career, I taught health education. So I've always, again, been around the health field, did a lot of training. And then I changed my the direction of my life when I started my family. I presently have four boys. They are my pride and joy. They just absolutely give me the biggest reason for going on every single day. And, you know, this past year, they were even more a part of my strength and my courage. And so now I'm just kind of, you know, settling down a little bit, working on my health, working on my strength, and we'll go from there and see what's next.
So now, Becky, you have to understand that as the story goes, when you used to bring our cancer patients in before you were diagnosed and became a survivor, you were so kind and so considerate, and you would bring people who didn't have access to rides and bring them in. And I said to you, hey, girl, you look like you played some ball. And then you sassed me back and I sassed you back and we started trash talking. And I said, you know what? You may be taller than me, but I could box you out no problem. And you boxed me out and I boxed you out. Let me ask you, Angel, who do you think won the battle?
I want to say her, Becky.
She boxed me out so hard that when I woke up, I was in Chester. For those of you cancer survivors who don't know our geography, that's about 30 miles like southeast of here. So, you know, she boxed me out so hard that my grandmother got hurt.
Well, you know, it's like I always said, you have to use your greatest assets when you're playing under there.
Well, let me ask you this before we get into your cancer journey. But, you know, I know your sons and your family were great beacons of strength and inspiration for you, especially what an exciting time. And that'll be the second part of the question about this year, because this was your sons, the twins, at least, their most important year as far as trying to position themselves for scholarships and where to go to school. And as I was mentioning in my fantasy explanation, Kyle is going to play Division I for Coach K at Duke. And maybe that visualization of him winning the game against Carolina may come true now.
Well, Coach Shire, because Coach K will be retired by the time he gets there.
Oh, okay. Well, Coach Shire. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yep. But definitely something for the universe. But
absolutely, no doubt.
If you used your athletics, because I find athletes are trained to be tough in these kind of circumstances.
Yeah. I had also had my knee replaced from a high school injury, about 8 years ago now. And, you know, that was the thing too, that my physical therapist said, is that it's much different rehabbing, you know, something that severe, an athlete, because they have kind of been down that path. You know, I have torn up my ankles. I had injured my knee as a sophomore in high school. So, yeah, you develop that strength and that toughness to be able to continue going on. So, no doubt, a lot of people even said the same thing to me over the past year, that you know, the strength that I showed, that you know, the awe that they had for everything that I did this past summer, you know, and I definitely feel that. I think the lessons that I learned and how to, you know, develop that strength, you know, came from my athletic background.
So let's take it from the beginning. So you are in, as I said, coronavirus notwithstanding, the boys are starting their senior season. They're in prep school. They're getting a lot of looks, and it's really a very joyful time for your family. And all of a sudden, you know, as a good patient that you are, you go for your mammogram, and everybody tells you, oh, nothing to worry about. Take it from there.
Yeah, well, a lot of things, like everybody has experienced in one way or another, a lot of things changed during COVID. You know, there medically had been so many reports about the rise in the incidence of cancers because people were not getting in for their annual checkups, and, you know, things had changed with hospitals and facilities being closed down, and It was really scary, just, you know, from an overall perspective. Normally I do my annual checkups usually around March, April, and things were, you know, pretty much shut down. And, I didn't really consider it, or I really wasn't worrying about it. But finally, I started getting some letters in to come in and do my annual checkups early in August, late July, early August. And as it turns out, I was also on my 5-year checkup for my colonoscopy. So everything was hitting all at one time. And so when I first went in, and the first result came up with just a really small tumor, and it was malignant. And but then the strange thing is that even the timing, and with COVID, a friend of mine said, you know, COVID may have actually just saved your life. And the whole concept was that if I had gone in April, in my normal time, March, April, the tumor was so small that I have to question if they would even have seen it then, because the radiologist who saw my mammogram was very ambivalent about whether it was anything at all, if he wanted to proceed with a biopsy. And, you know, of course, the rest is history. But fortunately, during that course of what to do next, Dr. Karpoff was my surgeon, and he, he just kind of said, you know what, let's just do an MRI before we start pushing forward with this. And turns out that they found two other sites in the same breast. And so, I look at it, you know, in a way that I was very fortunate in terms of the timing and when I got everything done. And then I just had to tell my four boys before they all went in their separate ways for the fall. And I have to say, one of my proudest moments was hearing the encouragement from them. My middle guy, my 21-year-old, said, you know, Mom, you got this. We're with you. The twins were very much like, you know, you've had to overcome a lot of adversity in your life and your career. You'll overcome this too. It just made me so, so proud to hear the values that I always wanted to instill in my kids were coming back, and they were actually helping me.
Wow, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. So then you went from your original surgery, did then the mastectomies and reconstruction.
Yep, did all that at once. From there, then we also found out that I had 3 of the 4 sentinel nodes were positive. So that, you know, pretty much sealed the deal that I was going to have chemo. And so then, you know, once again, the boys were home for the holidays, and I had to say, well, this is going to be a little bit more detailed than we thought. And I always wanted to portray my strength and my confidence that this was going to be okay. And so, you know, when I explained to them that, you know, this is what it's going to be like, they were just very much, all right, well, we gotta go through this. And I didn't have my hair completely shaved before I lost it all, but it was really, really short. And so when I came home, there was always, you know, like that startled feeling, and they came around and did okay, you know. And and it became a joke later on that I tried to make light of it, and you know, and they were always teasing their father for how thin his hair is, and I said, well, I bet you never thought that I'd be bald before daddy, you know. And so, you know, that's kind of where, you know, I tried to just always stay positive and just keep moving through it.
Exactly. And you did that, by the way. You were a great inspiration to all of us here. And now you're going through the last part, right? So you go through your chemotherapy, and then you get to us. And that was not an easy task either.
No. I mean, you know, in the big picture, you know, the idea is that radiation is going to be easier than what I had just gone through with chemo. But, you know, nonetheless, it's it gives you a whole nother perspective in just how much skin damage that we incur just by, you know, doing things like being outside for too long or using tanning beds the wrong way. And,
yep.
And, you know, here in a medical sense, you know, it's a very direct treatment. And so, you know, I had gotten about as far as I could before you put up the stop sign for a week. And you know, true to my form, I battled that because I had my objectives.
Yes, you did.
I was like, no, I've got things to do. I've got to get this done. But no, I greatly appreciated that because that week that I had off, I also got my COVID vaccine. So I was a little bit worn out. And so I just took the whole week to deal with both things at once. So, but yeah, everything's worked out really well. And I was just really grateful that you were still there in whatever sports jersey you're going to wear. So that was something that I was looking forward to.
So now, Becky, we're going to get to the actual, the lesson from today's podcast is about the bell. So mm-hmm. Set the table for us for that last week of therapy leading up to the bell ceremony, your thoughts going into it, you know, the day before, 2 days before, and then the actual morning of your treatment, your last treatment, and take us through the ceremony.
Well, first of all, I had gotten a little bit of a introduction to the bell because when I was volunteering for the American Cancer Society and driving patients to their treatments, you know, I had always heard in the back room a bell ring. And there were a couple of patients that I had transported quite a bit that had even asked me to come in and to be witness to their ringing the bell. So I was already familiar. The other thing that I really liked in the facility is I'm a very goal-oriented person. And every single day I walk past that bell. Every single day your patients walk past that bell. And whether you had to stop the treatments for a period of time to let the skin heal, or whether you just, you know, sailed right through the protocol, every single day you got to see the you know, I guess the reward of going through the whole process, if you want to look at it that way. One of the other things that I did, I think you're familiar with, during the course of my daily visits, I left a post-it note in somebody's office outside the facility, and she created a wall.
Yes.
And every single day it was another number towards my full complete protocol. And
I think
so,
it was Jessica. Jessica Gerlach. Yeah.
Yeah. And so
or Kathy DeRosa.
No, it was Kathy. It was Kathy's office. Yeah, Kathy DeRosa. Yeah. So, you know, I kind of just did it. And again, I had known Kathy from previous trips in with other patients. And so, you know, we got to hit it off. And it was the same thing with your staff. You know, I knew all of them from the past. So that in itself, in the friendliness and the familiarity, was also something that really helped me every single day of the week to come through and to do another treatment. And so I would leave my post-it notes daily for Kathy, and she started a wall. And what was so cool was a couple of weeks after that, there was another patient who had gone into her office to talk to her and saw what we were doing. And she picked up with making her own cards every day to commemorate, you know, this is one less day, this is one less day kind of a thing. So I try to always find, this may not be something positive, and there is a lesson to be learned in this. And if I could just give one more person, which evidently I did, you know, a little more incentive or a little more strength or courage to continue going through it, it was just really fascinating to see how that got picked up. But yeah, every day walking past the bell, you know, but I probably didn't really like get excited about it until the day before. And just being prepared and knowing that that day of ringing the bell, the finality, the you know, screaming from the hilltop kind of sensation that was coming. And when Angel talked earlier also about making the phone call for the bell ringing, now that makes a lot of sense, because when I came out after my last treatment into the hallway and there were dozens of people there, now I get where they all came from.
They came from everywhere.
And, you know, it's just so exciting. You know, one of the other things, if I can associate it with, is, you know, with all of the loss that we have during COVID, that when somebody did leave a hospital, that they had the staff in the hallway just applauding, you know, for the person who got discharged. And I just really felt that was just fantastic. So, yeah. So when I got out to the bell, I was ready and I was excited. And like I said, you know, screaming from the hilltops was my association.
Yeah. And who read the poem for you?
Oh, I have it on a video and now I cannot think of it. Was it Maria?
It might have been Maria. Yeah,
I think it was Maria.
Yeah. So obviously your boys are there. You know, we read the poem, you ring the heck out of the bell. We're all crying, every single person there. Tell me your thoughts.
You know, of course the poem is very much a part of the bell ringing. It's you know, very inspirational, and you know, pretty much, you know, again, is that transition. It talks about what you've gone through and it gives you permission to move on. And I think that with everything that was going on around me, you know, I had just kind of said to the boys that morning that I said, listen, you know, I'm finishing up radiation today and there's a ceremony after where you get to ring a bell. And I said, would you guys like to go with me? And so, yeah, so of course they came along, and you know, I think, again, another lesson that I've wanted to instill on my kids is just that persistence and striving to, you know, to do the best that you can do. And, you know, they were there when I started it. And so it was really special for me to have them there when I finished it. And I just think that, you know, for each person, it might be different, but there certainly is a sign, a message, you know, just a way of being able to really make a statement about your journey through that time. And yeah, I think I worried after I let go of the rope that I might have just ripped it right off the wall.
We would have been fine with that. There's always more rope.
I was really, really excited about ringing it. And you know, it's like one of those things where I felt like I wasn't going to stop because I was so excited. But yeah, it makes the occasion, you know, very positive as you come through that. And probably the greatest memory is the last memory. And so that was really helpful. On another note, I want you to know that ringing the bell became a national event that day for me. As you mentioned about the boys being heavily recruited to play basketball, there were probably, and I have them still, I won't erase them on my cell phone. There were probably about six college coaches around the country from Iowa to Syracuse to Michigan to Duke. You know, people were just with me. I had chosen not to say anything to these coaches right away with my son's recruitment because I didn't want it to be a part of the conversation. But once we got to May and, you know, I was feeling stronger and I was, you know, feeling confident in talking about it. And I told the college coaches, because we were getting ready to go on visits. And Cancer Versus Coaches is a huge, huge fundraising organization that the NCAA has for helping to support research and treatment for cancer.
Was that started? I don't mean to interrupt you. Was that from the Jimmy V Foundation?
Yep.
That's how it started. Okay.
Yep. And so there are numerous events, fundraising events that that go on around the country. And, you know, I have to say too that all of those coaches who kept touch with me through the process. I mean, I had a coach that would text me every morning, 5 minutes before I would come in for my treatment. And, you know, he would just give me like stars or a big muscle icon or what have you. And you know, I came to look forward to that. And this was a coach that was recruiting my son. You know, this isn't a family member or long lost friend kind of a thing. So, I just want to say too that there were a lot of bells ringing that morning around the country, and they sent me videos and they sent me well wishes. And it just has become even more inspirational. And I think just the symbolism that gives people having something positive at the end of it.
Unbelievable. What a beautiful story. Angel, I rest my case.
So I'm going to slide over because Dr. E doesn't even know this. So I'm going to take you back. Couple of months ago, I was here to visit Dr. E. And at the time, I used to come through the main entrance of the cancer center. And as I was waiting for him, I ran into Sherry. It was a young lady that's in the office.
Yeah.
Kathy DeRosa.
Kathy, sorry.
Yeah, Kathy.
Kathy.
Kathy. And I walked in, and I know Kathy from just interacting on the phone. And we're talking, and I turn to my left and I see this wall. And I look at the wall and something spoke to me and said, ask about this wall. So I asked her and she described, without giving your name, because, you know, HIPAA laws and everything, mm-hmm. about this woman. And we've already heard the story, so I don't have to repeat it. And I said to her, what an inspiring person. What would it take for me one day? I only pray and hope that I will be graced with her presence. I'm sitting to the left as you are speaking, and I get choked up because I finally get to meet you, and I didn't even know that you were the girl.
Aww.
I said to her, if there ever is a day that I can see her, if she's ever in the waiting area, if there's ever a time that I can speak with her, I want to relay a message so I get to tell you now in person.
Aww.
Not only will we help you with that, I'm going to make her box you out.
I'll go easy on you, Angel.
Yeah. So my message to you is this, because I've been waiting, is there are so many people in this world that are brought here for a purpose. We can't explain it. We can't predict it. We don't know what their purpose is, but they have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You have inspired me by just looking at a wall to know that there are more people in this world. There's such good people out there, but more or less, you have this heart, this amazing heart. And to know that your children are being raised by someone like you, it means that there are four more angels prepared to send out bigger and better messages. So as a parent, I say thank you.
Thank you.
Becky, I end our podcasts usually the same way. Today, we're going to do it a little bit differently. Of course, our gratitude exercises are always in store. Angel Santana, best co-host producer. Have Faith, Let It Begin. We're going to have to get Becky on your podcast.
Already writing it down.
There you go. Rod Freeman, Small Biz Up. Thank you, Rod. John, Michael Benzea, Charlotte Larson for your patronage. Thank you very much. And I am going to end this podcast the same as I end all of these podcasts, but this time it's going to be on behalf of Angel Santana, Becky Filipowski, the Twin Towers, who are going to make a great impact on this world, as will your other two sons. I want to wish all of our cancer survivors a very long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life, especially to you, my love. We love you. We adore you. God bless you. God keep you. Peace.
Thank you. Back at you.